you, Patty, for that good job of song leading. It's good to see everyone tonight. I trust that you've all had a pleasant afternoon. This morning we began to look at the importance of having Jesus abide in our homes, and we looked at that issue by examining some occasions where Jesus literally was in people's homes. And in fact, it might be interesting to you sometime to just begin to go through your New Testament Gospels in a cursory way and just notice all the occasions when Jesus is in someone's house. And I think there are some very interesting lessons that we can learn by looking at those occasions. I want to continue that thought tonight by noting with you that Jesus entered the homes of people that others would never have entered. And that's one thing that strikes me as I look at these occasions when Jesus is dining with someone or entering into their home. So often it's people that were looked down upon by others in that society. And Jesus is so often entering into homes that other people never would have entered. For instance, in Mark chapter 14 and verse 3, there's just this casual mention of the fact that the owner of the home that Jesus was dining with on this occasion was Simon the leper, which kind of strikes me. That, of course, would have been an individual that under that Mosaic law would have been unclean. And I doubt that you would have had any Pharisees that would have been willing to sit at table with that particular individual. And yet the text just presents it as if it's not even a big deal for Jesus to be eating with this particular man, Simon the leper. Or when you look in the Gospels, you see that there are numerous occasions when Jesus is eating with publicans, that is, tax collectors and sinners. And of course, just recently, we have had our vacation Bible school, and we looked at one occasion of Zacchaeus, that day that he met Jesus, and you read about that in Luke chapter 19 and verse 5. And of course, there's an occasion where Jesus eats with this particular individual. In fact, it's interesting, Jesus invites himself. Normally, we might not think that that would be the most appropriate thing to do, to just tell somebody, I'm going to eat with you today. We might think that's a little bit forward. But of course, as we talked about in our vacation Bible school, what made this not forward at all, in fact, what made it a wonderful thing, was that Jesus was, quote, inviting himself to dine with a man that other Jews would not have in any way, shape, or form ever have considered dining with, because he was a publican. He was a man who was reputed, along with all of the other tax collectors, those publicans, to be people who had rejected the law of Moses, who therefore did not follow the commandments of God, who had just renounced the whole concept of the Abrahamic covenant and all the rights and privileges that would pertain thereto. And he was a man who hung out with sinful people. And so that's not the kind of individual that would normally have been viewed as a fit eating companion, as someone that it would be fit to abide with for any length of time. And yet Jesus did. And the reason why Jesus did is because Jesus recognized that that man, though he was a sinner and though he had lived a very reprobate life up to that point, that man needed salvation, and that man was salvageable if there was just someone who would present the gospel of forgiveness and grace to him. And Jesus was ready and willing to do that. And it wasn't just that on that one occasion Jesus ate with this publican. In fact, in Matthew chapter 9, we read of this incident. It happened that as Jesus was reclining at the table in Matthew's house, and yes, that's Matthew the apostle, the man who would later be the apostle Matthew, but just a few verses earlier, the text talked about how Jesus had called this tax collector, this publican, while he was sitting in his tax booth to come and be his full-time disciple. So the text now goes on to say that Jesus, when he was reclining at the table in Matthew's house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were dining with Jesus and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why is your teacher eating with tax collectors and sinners?" But when Jesus heard this, he said, "It is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire compassion and not sacrifice, for I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners. What you see in this narrative and all of these occasions when Jesus is residing with people in their homes where other people never would have done that, what you see is that Jesus had compassion on anyone who needed help. And that's the lesson that we see here that Jesus was teaching in Matthew chapter 9. You don't understand that passage from Hosea 6, verse 6. That passage says, I desire compassion and not sacrifice. In other words, it is more important to God, vastly more important, for God to see his servant showing compassion on those who are less fortunate than God seeing them come to worship him in some formal way countless number of times. The compassion, the mercy, the pity that you have on other people who are in need, especially, as we see in this case, people who are in spiritual need. Seeing us help those people means so much more to God than however many songs we sing about how much we love the Lord and how much we love Jesus. Or how many times we partake of the Lord's Supper, or how many prayers that we offer. And Jesus is showing us a lesson here that no one is outside the purview of God's grace as long as they are willing to hear and obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. And Jesus recognized there are some spiritually sick people here who need help. And I'm going to give it to them. And it may have meant that Jesus was looked down upon by other people in the world. But Jesus didn't care about that. There were people in need. There were sick people. And at risk to himself, he is willing to go in and endure any kind of repercussion against himself to help these people who were the outcasts of Jewish society. There's a lesson there for you and me. Brethren, we need to be compassionate people. And we need to be people who are looking for others who are in need and not just look for people who fit our social status, who are the kind of people that we like to hang out with. We don't need to be trying to approach people with the gospel who are only those that we personally like and that we personally want to be friends with. Not to say we shouldn't start with those who are friends, who are our friends, but we don't need to be limited to that. Jesus showed compassion on anyone who was in need of help, and we need to give that same spiritual help too. I tell you something else that strikes me when I look at these occasions when Jesus was entering people's homes and spending time with them. He even entered the homes of his opponents. Isn't that an interesting thought? Jesus was willing to go right there into the homes of those people who were his potential opponents, or sometimes people who had made it clear in the past, or we're certainly making it clear right then, that they may have had some ulterior motive in even having Jesus come into their home. That didn't stop Jesus. In Luke chapter 7, verses 36 and following, you read a marvelous account of Jesus going into the home of a man named Simon, who was a Pharisee. And in fact, there is a sinful woman who is so appreciative of Jesus and his willingness to accept her and these other outcasts of society, that she washes Jesus' feet with her tears, so to speak, and dries his feet with her hair. And Jesus even uses that occasion to teach a lesson to Simon the Pharisee about the fact that a person like this, who has been forgiven of many sins, that's the kind of person who's even probably more ready and willing to love God with a greater depth and feeling than even a righteous man like Simon the Pharisee. Jesus was willing to say that in the house of Simon with everybody else there. He was willing to say that face to face with that man because that man needed to hear that lesson. And yet that was a man who was a Pharisee and in fact at least to some degree, to the extent that Pharisees were held in high esteem. He was a leading man among the Jewish people of that day. And so Jesus, going head to head with or face to face with that particular individual, puts himself at some measure of risk. And as you keep reading in the Gospels, it's very obvious that the opposition that Jesus had with the Pharisees during his ministry was a major reason why Jesus finally wound up being arrested and crucified. But again, despite the personal risk, Jesus was still willing to enter into the household of his potential opponent and to say exactly what needed to be said. Luke chapter 14, verses 1 through 6, presents another occasion where Jesus is dining with, of all people, a Pharisee. In fact, let's just look at this. It happened that when he went into the house of one of the leaders of the Pharisees on the Sabbath to eat bread, they were watching him closely. And there in front of him was a man suffering from dropsy. And Jesus answered and spoke to the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day?" But they kept silent. And he took hold of him and healed him and sent him away. And he said to them, "Which one of you will have a son or an ox fall into a well and will not immediately pull him out on a Sabbath day?" And they could make no reply to this. Now, there's a lot of things that we could say about this particular incident. Of course, the fact that Jesus healed on a Sabbath day was always a major problem for the Pharisees, the scribes and the Pharisees, because as far as they classified that, any kind of healing was work, and therefore that, in their minds, was prohibited by the Sabbath day restriction. And it made no difference in their minds that Jesus was healing miraculously. He was still violating what they were on record as saying was the kind of action that was in violation of the Sabbath commandment. And so Jesus was potentially making them look bad in the eyes of the people, maybe even potentially taking away the disciples of the Pharisees from the influence that the Pharisees had over them. And Jesus here goes right into that home, right into that place where all the Pharisees and all the scribes are, knowing why he's received the invitation. You'll notice the text even says they were all watching him to see what he would do. You think maybe the Pharisee had him in his home on the Sabbath day for a reason? The ulterior motive? Maybe see if he would do something they could then blame him for as violating the Sabbath day? Jesus stood toe-to-toe with them and said, "I'm going to raise the question that you're wondering about. Let's just hit it head on. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" And then he did it. He healed on the Sabbath day. That took courage. Jesus had courage to say and to do what was needed at the moment. Folks, might I just say something to us very candidly? Do you know one thing we have to have if we want to be a Christian? We've got to have absolute courage. Because there are going to be times as a Christian when we are going to have to speak to other people whom we may fear will not like the words of the gospel, and yet the words of the gospel have to be defended. There may be occasions where we are going to be called upon as Christians to stand up against people that we know are absolutely opposed to everything that Christianity is standing for. But if we, the disciples of Jesus, don't take a stand and defend the gospel of Jesus Christ, well, then who will? It takes courage to be a Christian. And Jesus was willing to go into the area where the opponents of the gospel were and say what needed to be said and do what needed to be done. And I'll tell you one reason why he was willing to do that. It really gets back to even the earlier point that we saw, that Jesus was wanting to help whoever was in need. Do you know who Jesus recognized was also in need of the gospel? very much in need of the gospel. All those righteous scribes and Pharisees. All those self-righteous scribes and Pharisees who were really good people. And because they were such good people, it never dawned upon them that they might still have some flaws that needed to be corrected. They might still have some blind spots. And Jesus was willing to say even to his opponents, even to those who could ultimately cause him great harm, what needed to be said because he was concerned about their souls like everybody else. It takes courage to present the gospel of Jesus Christ, to talk to people about Christianity. And yet that's what Jesus calls upon his disciples to do. Several years ago, I was preaching a lesson. Wasn't in this particular place. But I was preaching a lesson, and I was talking about the need to do personal evangelism. And talking about that's part of what being a disciple of Jesus means, to spread the word of the gospel. And there was a young girl who talked to me after that lesson about the fact that I had really pricked her heart. And she just got so nervous when she would try to talk about Jesus to people at work or friends of hers. But she knew that she needed to, and she was going to do better about that. And so that was great. Well, she came back to me the next week, and she told me this story about what happened at work. The very next day, that Monday, after she'd heard that lesson, she said, I saw this girl that I work with every day. I've been working with her for years, and I've never said a word to her about the gospel. And I felt so guilty about that. It's just terrible. And we're friends and all that. And so I just talk to myself all morning and all morning and all morning. And the hours are going by. And I said, okay, I'm just going to do it. You know, and she goes up there to this girl, and she was wanting to say something about inviting her to church, or, you know, can I talk with you about Jesus or something like that. And she said, Marty, I just went up to her and I said, hi, I heard a sermon yesterday. And she walked away. That's it. That's all she could do. That's all she could muster up, you know. But hey, that may not have been much, but it took courage what she did. At least that was the first step. At least that was the first step. And I think we all understand that it is frightening. It is nerve-wracking to talk with people about the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's difficult to invite somebody to church. And we think of all the reasons why it's going to be a negative experience. That person is going to look down on us. And after all, a lot of them go to their own church, and they think we're just trying to somehow steal them from their church to come into our church. And that's not exactly what we're trying to do, though we are trying to teach them the gospel. And then we kind of go through all those middle machinations, you know, and everything. And then we think of, well, the person might not like me, and it might get into some kind of an argument, and then the friendship will be over. And, you know, then we rationalize, well, then I'll just, first of all, just be a friend to them. And then after I'm a friend, well, then eventually I'll be able to have a reason to talk with them about the gospel, the opportunity, you know. And of course, we are a friend for years and years and years and years, and somehow the opportunity never arises, you know. And so we kind of go through all that kind of rationalization. And I know that's difficult. It's difficult for me. And people sometimes think, oh, it's just easy, you know, you can do that. That's just not true. But what Jesus is saying to us as his disciples is you've got to go ahead and have the courage to look at somebody face to face and talk with them to some degree about the gospel, and somehow introduce that, somehow start that ball rolling for that person's ultimate good. And if we're not willing to do that, then we're not much of a friend. I don't care how much we say, oh, I'm just best friends with that person. No, no, you're not. If you don't help that person with what they need. And even if this is a person who is a potential enemy, a potential absolute opponent of you and the gospel, hey, sometimes the gospel of Jesus Christ needs to be defended. And we cannot be so fearful that we don't take a stand for our Lord and His teaching. And isn't that why Jesus said in the Great Commission in Matthew 28, verse 20, after He had commissioned His apostles to go into all the world and make disciples of all the nations and baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Heavenly Ghost, what's the very next thing that He said? He said, and behold, I am with you until the end of the age. And He said that knowing He was leaving them. But His point is, I'm never going to be away from you. Not really. Not ultimately. No matter what you have to go through, I'm always going to be right there with you. That's why Paul said to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 4, everyone else deserted me, the Lord stood by me. He's always going to be there. He's always going to be there when you're talking with your friend and getting the courage to invite your friend to go ahead and come to church services. He's right there with you. And He sees your knees shaking. He sees your hand shaking. He hears your voice quiver. He understands that, but He's proud of you. But He's proud of you. He's been there. And He's with you when you get into some discussion with someone who argues with you about whether or not baptism really is necessary to be saved. And now you're on the spot. And now you're in that position where you have to take a stand and defend the gospel truth. Jesus is right there with you. And He knows what that's like. But Jesus had the courage to say and do what was needful for the benefit of that person who may be the opponent or other people who are influenced by that person. He's been through that, and He's right there with you, and He's going to be there to strengthen you. And so we see that illustrated when we look at how Jesus was even willing to enter into the homes of people who were not really His friends and who really were opponents of His message. You know, Jesus encouraged people who were trying their best. He encouraged people. And you see this when you look at occasions where Jesus was in people's homes and there were occasions where something happens there that maybe other people see as some major flaw that someone has committed, some major error that someone has done, and yet Jesus has a more positive point of view about that. This incident with Mary, this is the Mary who's the sister of Martha. Of course, we talked about those two women in this morning's lesson. This story is recounted in Matthew chapter 26, verses 6 through 13, and it certainly appears to be parallel the same incident that's being recorded in John chapter 12, verses 1 through 8. But here's the Matthean account. Now, when Jesus was in Bethany at the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to Him with an alabaster vial, a very costly perfume. And this, from John's account, is apparently Mary, the sister of Martha. And she poured it on His head as He reclined at the table. But the disciples were indignant when they saw this and said, why this waste? For this perfume might have been sold for a high price and the money given to the poor. But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, why do you bother the woman? For she has done a good deed to me. For you always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me with you. Isn't that an interesting account, interesting narrative? Of all people to criticize, it's Jesus' disciples. I mean, these are the good people. So it's not like you can just kind of write off their criticism as, well, that's that kind of blind criticism of the Pharisees or the Sadducees or all these opponents of Jesus. No, these are Jesus' disciples. These are the good people. And yet here's Mary, and she has this very costly perfume, this very, very aromatic ointment, and she pours that over his head as a way of honoring him and expressing her appreciation for him. And the disciples think about that action and they think, that is such a waste of money. How many poor people could have been helped by this? And frankly, when you just kind of think of it from the disciples' point of view, can't you understand why they would have thought that? Now, you see in John's account that Judas had a bad motive for what he said, because Judas liked there to be a lot of money in the benevolence box because he pilfered those funds. But I don't think that's the way it was with these other disciples of Jesus. They're just thinking what really is a logical way to think. There's sure a lot of good things that could have been done with the money that could have been that could have been obtained from the sell of this perfume that they put on the head of Jesus. And yet look at what Jesus does. He thinks about that and he understands what the woman's motive was. She was trying to honor Jesus. And she's so appreciative for Jesus. And Jesus also thinks about this, and he recognizes something that he's been telling his disciples for weeks now, but they really hadn't gotten, that he's not going to be with them much longer. Because he knows in just a few more days, the Passover is going to be here, and that's going to be the time when he's going to get arrested and crucified. And so Jesus looks at that incident, and Jesus says, you know what this woman has done? Here's how I look at it. It isn't that she's slighted poor people. In fact, the poor are still going to be with you. A lot of opportunities to help those poor people. But I'm not going to be around here much longer. And in fact, Jesus thinks about how when he is crucified, they're going to bury him. And you know what they do when they would bury people in Jewish society? Guess what they would pour over their head? They'd pour fragrant ointments over the corpse so the body wouldn't stink quite as bad when it began to decompose and was put in a tomb. And so you know how Jesus just viewed this whole thing? Here's the twist Jesus put on it. You know what? They're going to spend a lot of money on my corpse in a few more days. This woman has just done that a little bit early. She just did it a few days early. And she did it because she wanted to honor me. And I'm not going to be around much longer anyway. You're still going to have the opportunity with the poor. What I want you to see when you look at this remarkable narrative, and I should have gone on and read the rest of it, because in verse 12 it says, for when she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for my burial. Truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be spoken of in memory of her. I mean, talk about not only not agreeing with the criticism or somehow turning off that criticism. Jesus gives this woman what has to be the most amazing compliment and most amazing honor. Here she's trying to honor him, and yet what Jesus does is turn that back on her and says, no matter how long things go, people are going to be talking about what this woman has done this day and honoring her. And it's kind of neat that, you know, it's 2,000 years later, and what are we talking about tonight in Valrico, Florida? But this woman and what she did. And so what you see in all of this is that Jesus encouraged people who were trying. In fact, what you see is that Jesus was ready to encourage people. He was not quick to condemn. And isn't that the way we are so often? So often we judge people in accordance with our standard and what I think would be the best way to handle something, and that person didn't do it my way, and so therefore I'm going to look with a critical eye at that person. That's what Jesus' disciples were doing here. But Jesus was not quick to condemn. In fact, he was quick to find the real truth about this woman's heart and attitude. And he saw something so noble and so worthy in what she was doing, and he took what must have been an utterly embarrassing event for that woman. Can you imagine that? Where all of the disciples in front of everybody criticized her for what she just did. And she can't take it back. She's already, in their minds, wasted the perfume. What can she do now? Jesus took that incident and just turned it all around to where he elevates this woman and encourages her in such a grand way. Why can't we be that kind of person? So often we're so negative. So often we're so quick to criticize. And so often the standard of judgment is our judgment about how things should be done. And somebody doesn't do it my way, and so we're quick to criticize, and they're just not being a good person, or they're not doing this like they should, this or that. Jesus was ready and quick to encourage people who were trying their best. Now, folks, may I say to you that even if there is an occasion where somebody has done something that maybe wasn't the best way for that to be done, before you just jump all over that person, try to ascertain what was their motive. I mean, maybe their motive was absolutely to do something good. Well, then focus in on that. Focus in on that. Maybe the reminder about poor people, that would be something that Mary could receive later on, but right now she did something good, and Jesus said it is good. Commend her for that. And her heart's absolutely in the right place. Before we jump all over somebody, even if there is some valid measure of criticism there, at least ascertain what's their motive. Maybe that's at least some mitigating circumstance there. And oftentimes, when we begin to analyze what the person's motive is, and maybe find out from their point of view why they did something, oftentimes what we discover is, you know what? What I thought was poor judgment or a wrong way to act, pretty good thing to do, after all. I'm the one who's wrong in my perspective. Jesus was ready to encourage, not quick to condemn. Well, we're looking at Jesus in the home, and that's what we've been talking about this entire evening. I'd like to just look at one final passage, and the lesson will be yours. I'd like you to look at Revelation chapter 3. And if you will, go down to verses 20 and 21. Revelation chapter 3, verses 20 and 21. Here Jesus, in this vision to the Apostle John, says this: "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in to him and will dine with him and he with me. He who overcomes, I will grant to him to sit down with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne." Well, that's a great statement, isn't it? Here's this picture of Jesus standing at our front door, the front door of our homes, and knocking. Are we willing to open the door and let him in? There's a picture of Jesus standing at the front door to our hearts individually. And he's knocking. He'd like to come in and take up residence. Are we willing to open the door and let him in? He says, "I'm going to come in and I'm going to sit with you and I'm going to dine with you, you with me and I with you." And then Jesus says the most remarkable thing. He says, in effect, he's saying, if you will allow me to abide in your home, then one day I'm going to invite you to come be with me in my home. And sitting down with me on the throne of my Father in that heavenly abode, you let me come in and dine with you. And one day I'm going to return the favor. And I'm going to invite you to come stay with me forever. That's pretty powerful. That's pretty powerful. We're talking about a special individual here, folks. We're talking about Jesus, the Son of God. There's no more important guest, no more important person who needs to be residing with you. Make him welcome. Open the door and let him come in. If you're here tonight and need to respond to the gospel, won't you come while together we stand and sing?